Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
A classic movie from Good Will Hunting. I showed that because almost every week I get up here and I say pretty much the same thing. I say that this life is about nothing more than to establish or to grow or develop or to strengthen your relationship with God that you'll be able to enjoy and it will last for all eternity. I mean, how many of y'all have heard me say that at some point? Anybody? Okay. Hopefully you'll never get tired of hearing it because I'm going to say it, I think, every single week. Because at the end of the day, that really is what life is all about. And if you don't understand that's what life is all about, then you're never going to truly understand anything you read in the Bible. You'll never really understand life as it is. You won't understand a perspective on life that puts everything in its proper place if you don't understand this life is about nothing more than having a loving relationship with God that you'll enjoy for all eternity. But there's a piece to that that's very frustrating as a pastor. And it's the piece that they sort of was talking about in that movie there, and that he's looking at this kid, and he's like, you know, if you don't know the backstory on the movie, the Matt Damon basically is this genius kid who's very well read. He reads and reads and reads, and he can just comprehend and understand things. And so he gets so arrogant and so closed off to the world. And so the psychologist is trying to help him sort of be able to relate to people better and sort of get a few things straight in his life and kind of deal with some things. And in the midst of it, they sort of had this big blow up and argument and whatnot. And that's when the psychologist realized this kid is so book smart. He doesn't know what to feel is. He doesn't know what to experience love is. He could tell you what love means, but he's never experienced it. And that's how I feel sort of as a pastor, is that I want you to have this experience with God or this emotional connection with God, but I can't do that for you. You know, I can't. You know, you can't know what it smells like in the Sistine Chapel, know what it feels like to be in that room unless you're there. You know what I mean? It's like I can get up here and I can tell you what love is. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It does not keep record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things. Love perseveres all things. I mean, I can tell you that out of 1 Corinthians, but it's different when you've experienced that and you've seen somebody who's loved you and been the very definition of love for you in your life. It's a totally different experience. Or, you know, I could read through in the scriptures because God uses all kinds of metaphors to describe what happens in your heart when you truly have a love for him. He talks about how, like, his law is written on your heart, that you just kind of instinctively know and want to do what it is that would make God happy. Like, you don't have to be told what's right and wrong. You just know. It's kind of like with when you're in a good, healthy relationship and somebody says, I better not do that. Why? She ain't gonna like it. And then you're like, well, did she ever say that? I'm like, trust me, she ain't gonna like that. It's like the law is written on your heart. You just instinctively sort of know it. And so God talks about how you have a circumcised heart. It's been changed. It's been altered because of your relationship with God. And Jesus talks about being born again or being, you know, a completely new person, putting on new clothes. All these are sort of metaphors to describe what's happening inside the heart of somebody who's changed and is in a relationship with God. But unless you've experienced it, you don't really. Those are just sort of empty words. You know what I mean? Like I am here, I can talk about it and I can explain it and I can give you illustrations of it. But at the end of the day, if you've never experienced that kind of love for God, it's just another piece of book knowledge. Or I can tell you about the people in the Bible and the Old Testament is full of these stories, especially about just people who had this love for God, like David, who just had this incredible love for God. And many of you, the whole time we've been going through this David series and you hear that David was a man after God's own heart, there's this peace within you that says, after all that guy did, how could he possibly be called a man after God's own heart? I mean, this is a guy who committed adultery and, you know, had that guy bumped off, and then he does this whole census thing where he has no faith and then he's a horrible dad. I mean, how could he be called a man after God's own heart? I mean, and I think the very fact that we would ask that question or think that question or have that thought go through our mind only betrays that we don't fully understand this relationship with God on a deeper level. Because if I were to ask any good Christian or anybody in the room perhaps, would you want it to be said of you that you are a man after God's own heart or that you are a woman after God's own heart? How many of y'all are with me on that? Y'all want that like to be said, like at the end of your life, that would be said of you? And so there's a piece of you that are looking at this and going, I want that said of me. But I'm looking at David, I'm thinking, how did he get away with that title? I mean, I don't think it'd be said of me, and I'm looking at all the stuff that he's doing, and, you know, it's almost betraying the fact that we're sort of saying, I want that title, so just tell me what I got to do to earn it. And as soon as you go there, you're not in the realm of love at all, are you? You're into some other weird merit-based sort of system. And so the very fact that we're looking at the question and saying, how could David possibly be somebody who is a man after God's own heart if he did all this stuff? It only betrays that we don't fully understand this loving relationship with God that he longs for and is after. And I mean, after all, love is messy, isn't it? We're all imperfect people. And just because you make mistakes and do dumb things doesn't mean you don't love somebody, right? I mean, you know that. You look around. I mean, the people in your life that love you, they've done a lot of things to hurt you and messed up a lot of ways, right? It doesn't mean they don't love you. It just means they're flawed or they're imperfect. But here's the thing. This is what we see in David and maybe we see in our own lives is that when you go through this experience of having messed up and then been forgiven, there is a deeper love that results, right? And David, through all of his failures, the thing that defines David with all his failures, remember a couple weeks back, I talked about it's not that you fall, because we all fall. Remember we said that we all fall? As you look at each other and say, we all fall, right? We all fall. It's not that you fall, it's what you do after you fall. How long do you stay down? How far down do you go? Do you get back up and you go back in the right direction? What happens when you fall? And with David, when he falls, he gets back up and he just sprints in the right direction. And he almost kind of has this deeper and deeper love. It's like when Jesus is at this dinner one time, it's talked about over in Luke chapter 7. He's at this dinner and there's this Pharisee who's invited him there. And then this street woman comes in and, you know, rushes over to his feet and starts pouring perfume on him and washing his feet and just sobbing. And everybody's kind of like, hey, aren't you going to say something here? And he just looks and he says, you know, Simon, you haven't given me the time of day since I came into your house. But yet this woman just can't stop showing love. And he says, at the end of the day, it's like this. Her sins, they are many. I mean, everybody can see them. But the thing is, she's been forgiven of so much. She loves so much in return. You don't think you have a lot to be forgiven for. So therefore, you have a hard time loving. And you see this principle all the more so in David's life. His blunders were huge, but the grace he received was huge. Now, if you want to go down a dumb path where he's like, well, maybe I should just sin some more so I can experience more grace, Paul addresses that specifically in Romans 6 and 7. So don't even go there. He just says, may it never be. Just don't even think of something that's stupid, okay? So, but the thing about David is always, he was so aware of his sin. Basically, you don't need to sin more to feel more of God's grace. You just need to be more aware of how deeply and how greatly you've sinned. Will that suffice, right? Okay. So David just had this immense sense of how much he'd been forgiven for by God. And you see that sort of coming out this one last time in this last story in his life over in 1 Chronicles chapter 21 where we pick back up. And this is where David has taken a census and has been out of arrogance and out of pride and sort of almost sort of a prideful heart for rebellion to say, look at me, look at all I've got, look what all I've done. You're going to see this whole, the reaction he has to that's going to come back in full effect in chapter 29. So he takes a census based on this idea to look at all I have, look at all I've done. I just want to mass and look before my life is over. I just want to look and see all the stuff I've done. So he takes this census. And God comes in, he's like, okay, you think all this is yours? Okay, I'm going to show you just how fragile and how frail everything is. And so God comes in with judgment. And when you read about this in 1 Chronicles 21, David looks up and he saw the angel of the Lord standing between heaven and earth with a sword drawn in his hand and extended over Jerusalem. And David freaked out. You with me on this? Like if you stood, I mean, it's just imagine if you walked out and you saw an angel of the Lord coming with a sword, it's about to come down in your house. I mean, wouldn't that freak you out? So David falls down on the ground, clothed in sackcloth, which is a way of saying, you know, I want my outward appearance to look like my heart. I am just ruined. I am not proud. I am like a beggar before God at this point. And David said to God, God, wasn't it me that did all of this, that ordered all these things, all the fighting men to be counted? I'm the shepherd and I'm the one who sinned. I'm the one who's done wrong. But all these sheep, because everybody's going to get punished for what David did here. He says, but all these sheep, what have they done? Lord, let your hand just fall on me and my family, but don't let this plague remain on your people. I mean, he is just torn up over the fact of all of the calamity that he's brought from his choices, because our choices affect everybody else, right? You know that, right? And you just have those moments where you just wish, if only I could take that back, if only this would just affect me and not everybody else. And so the angel of the Lord ordered David to go up and build an altar of the Lord, or altar to the Lord, there at the threshing floor of Arunah the Jebusite. So he says, listen, all right. Basically, what God is saying here is, instead of punishing you, you can offer a sacrifice. And so here we see, once again, modeled for us, this what was called the sacrificial system in the Old Testament. The idea was is that instead of taking the punishment out on David and his family or among the people, the punishment will be transferred or substituted for, somebody will be substituted in your place, will be put, taken out on this animal. So he says, go up and make an altar, and there we'll sacrifice an animal, and the animal will take on the brunt of the punishment for what you've done. Okay, and by the way, sort of this is alluded to over in Hebrews chapter 10, it talks about how this sacrificial system in the Old Testament was done because they didn't have Jesus yet. And it wasn't that the blood of bulls and goats ever forgave anybody. This wasn't going to forgive David. What it was is this was a way for him to take part in the ultimate sacrifice that would be made by Jesus on the cross that we celebrate every week with communion. It was a way for him to partake in that even though we didn't know anything about Jesus at the time. Does that make sense? So the author of Hebrews talks about how the blood of bulls and goats couldn't take away the sin. It was just a way for them to partake in the ultimate sacrifice that is really pointing towards, which was Jesus Christ. And so when David goes up to this place to offer a sacrifice, it's as if he's saying, God's saying, okay, I will not punish you. I will punish my son, Jesus Christ, instead. So go up to this place and offer a sacrifice, sort of looking forward to the day in which I will ultimately do that through Jesus. That's sort of a bigger picture understanding of what's going on here. So 1 Chronicles chapter 21 continues. And it says, so David went up in obedience to the Lord. It says, and Arunah was there threshing wheat because it's his threshing floor. That's where he would go up and throw the wheat up and separate out. So it was and Arunah sees and turns and sees an angel, and the four who were with him, his four sons who were with him, all hid themselves. Just then David approaches. So like he's up there, he sees an angel, and then David walks up, and he says, can I have this site, your threshing floor, so I can build an altar to the Lord so that the plague on the people may be stopped? Will you sell it to me for full price? Now, picture you're Arunah. What are you going to do? Tell him no? You just saw an angel, right? You're freaked out. You're on the ground. You don't know what's going on. You just see an angel. And then the king of the land shows up and says, hey, can I have this place to build an altar to the Lord? You know, so we can get rid of this plague. You're like, by all means, what does he say? He just says, take it. It's yours. You know, you don't need to buy it from me. Just take it. I'm out of here. I'm on. Right? I mean, right? And David's thinking, freebie. I love free stuff, right? No. David says back. He says, no, I insist on paying the full price, for I will not take for the Lord what is yours, or sacrifice a burnt offering that costs me nothing. You get that? He's like, I can't just waltz up here and take this for free. You know, I can't offer something up to God that doesn't cost me anything. It's you know, the thing about when you've received grace from God, because he knew what was coming on him. He knew that God had just given him this amazing grace, okay? When you've received that kind of grace, you will stop at nothing to repay. I mean, you all have, every one of you, I'm sure, has somebody in your life where you would say about them, because of what they've done for you, how they've helped you in a difficult time, if they were ever in need, you would drop everything and go to their aid, right? It doesn't matter what it costs, you'd be there to help them out. Ain't no mountain high, ain't no valley too low, just because of what they've done for you. And then there's other people at Christmas time that you have to give a gift to, right? You know what I'm talking about. And for these people, you search very, very carefully and look through just to find the perfect gift somewhere in your house that you can re-gift. Right? You know what I'm talking about. And David says, Arunah, I am not going to re-gift to God. You with me on this? I will not re-gift. I will not, because that's what you're doing. You're giving a gift that costs you nothing. I feel like I have to give it, and I don't want to give it, so I don't want to give anything of mine to this person that I feel like I have to give to, so what will I do? Like you have that office gift exchange. Let's just go anonymous with this. You're like, I don't want to go out and spend $20 on some stupid trinket because I know I'm going to end up with something dumb in return. What on earth could I possibly, ooh, here's something I got last year's office exchange, right? And David says, God is not an office exchange for me. God's not somebody I want to re-gift something to. God's somebody that I go to Jared for or something. I don't know. I don't know what you do. God be like, he went to Jared. No. I default to my marketing background. So he just bottom line, he says, listen, I'm not going to give a gift that costs me nothing. I don't want to be there on that day and give a gift to that special someone when they say, oh my goodness, where did you find this? How did you get this? Oh yeah, that was, I found it at my parents' house when I was home last year for Christmas. Yeah, I figured you might like it. Like, I'm not going to do that to God. You just don't do that to someone that you love that deeply. He says, I'm not going to give a gift that costs me nothing. I just want to know that that's just it's where I'm at in my relationship with God. And You know, and for what David ends up doing is his, this isn't a gift of convenience. This isn't a gift out of his excess. He says, I want to pay full price. I want to give from my own personal inventory to this whole thing. And it's out of that experience. And when God forgives him there and he receives the grace there and the punishment that was going to come on the people, this isn't transferred to the sacrifice, which, by the way, once again, is a precursor to Jesus Christ. When he sees all that happening, that's where he says, I want to build a house for the Lord right here so that everybody can experience what I just experienced. And then God tells him, no, because you're a man of bloodshed. And he's like, all right, then the next generation will. And so he proceeds out. This is where you go over to First Chronicles chapter 29. And here's what he does to prepare the way for the next generation. Not only does he buy the threshing floor, okay, he then wants to, he's going to stockpile enough resources. So all his son has to do is walk in and press play. Okay, that's all he's got to do and build this thing. He does the architectural plans for it. He does all the site prep work for it. He does everything he possibly can short of building it, right? And it says this in 1 Chronicles chapter 29. David says, with all my resources, that's key there, all. I mean, he is literally putting everything into this. He says, with all my resources, I have provided for the temple of God. Gold for the gold work, silver for the silver work, bronze for the bronze work. Anybody guess what the iron was for? Was for the iron work, wood for the all kinds of for the woodwork. I just kind of like, really? Does that need to be said? Did you provide gold for the woodwork or was it wood for the woodwork? I don't know. He says, as well as onyx for the settings and turquoise and stones of various colors and all kinds of fine stone and marble, and all of these in large quantities. Now, what he hasn't told you yet is that all of that stuff that he had access to as king. It'd be kind of like saying, you know, I want to, you know, I see you're building something. I want to give to this. And so my company will come in and we will do all of blah, 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 blah for you. That's what he's just done there. So he's given everything he has at his disposal as the king over the land and the resources. But then he goes on and he says this. He says, besides, in my devotion to the temple of my God, I now give my personal treasures of gold and silver for the temple of God over and above everything else I've already provided for this holy temple. And he goes on to list it, 3,000 talents of gold. By the way, that's like over 100 tons of gold. Just let that sink in at over $1,000 an ounce right now, like $1,200 an ounce, what that cost. By the way, his gifts here in today's dollars would be somewhere between $850 and $900 million. Million dollar, right? I mean, he's almost giving $1 billion of his own personal wealth to this. Just let that sink in. Okay, he says, so 3,000 talents of gold, 7,000 talents of refined silver for the overlaying of the walls of the building, for the gold work and the silver work and for all the work that will be done by craftsmen. Then he says, now who is willing to consecrate themselves to the Lord today? And he says, who's willing to join me in this endeavor? Who is willing to take what they have and set it apart for God? Basically, what you see here is when you've been so touched by grace, when you've been so overwhelmed by love, there is no limit to what you will give. There's just no limit. You know, just how much is too much? You have these loving relationships where you just get to the point where there's it doesn't matter what the cost is. It doesn't matter what the time effort is. It doesn't matter. You're not counting the cost. You're not thinking about it. You're just thinking, I want to give. I want to do. I want to provide. I just want to thank you in some way, shape, or form for what you've done for me. And so then the people jump in on this, and it says, and the leaders of the family and the officers of the tribes of Israel, the commanders of thousands, the commanders of hundreds, and the officials in charge of the king's work, they all gave willingly, and they gave towards the work of the temple of God 5,000 talents and 10,000 derricks of gold. So it's basically a big sum and also some little things. 10,000 talents of silver, 8,000 talents of bronze, and 100,000 talents of iron. So these people are bringing this stuff in by the ton. I mean, just the dump trucks full of stuff they're bringing in. And it says, and they... people had precious stones, gave them to the treasury of the Lord. It says, and the people rejoiced at the willing response of their leaders, for they had given freely and wholeheartedly to the Lord. And David the king also rejoiced. And I usually have to explain things, but here I don't really think I need to explain them. I'm just going to keep on reading what all goes down with this. And David, who was always a songwriter, whenever he would see stuff, he would sort of interpret and just begin to write a song. And so he writes a song about this. It's not in the Psalms. It's actually recorded right here in Chronicles. And he says... It says, praise be to you, O Lord, the God of our father Israel, from everlasting to everlasting. And by the way, if you ever took Crown Financial, this is one of the memory verses from Crown Financial. Just anybody, Crown Financial days way back in just me. Never mind. All right. The Ramsey stuff is good, but the only thing that Crown had going for it was it was a lot of Bible memorization you did for it, which was really good. And this was one of the verses right here. And I'd almost, I know I'm setting this up a little bit, but this was like the longest passage we had to learn for the Crown Financial class. It was just like Dave Ramsey with a bunch of Bible verses learned. And we all like dreaded learning this verse. But the guy who was teaching it said, listen, I know this is a long verse. However, if you only memorize one passage the entire time you're in here for the next 16 weeks, just memorize this one. I don't care if you don't memorize any of the other verses, any of the weekly assignments. If you just work on getting this one down. And once I read it, you'll see the reason why, because everything else falls into place once you get this down. He says this. Here's what David says. Yours, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the majesty and the splendor. For everything in heaven and earth is yours. Now remember, what started this whole deal with him? What started the whole thing? How did this all goes back to his original sin here, right? What was his original sin? He's getting to the end of his life. He's looking at all the stuff that I have, all the stuff that I've amassed, all the power that I have. And so I'm feeling really good about all that I've done and all that I've accrued and all that I've built up. And so I just want to get a survey of all the things that I have. And he's completely taking God out of perspective in this moment, right? And God sort of steps in. He's like, oh, all this is your stuff? Okay. You're about to lose a lot of your stuff because I'm going to show you instantly whose all this stuff really is. And that's when this whole judgment comes down. In the midst of all that, David cries out. He's like, no, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Please, just take the burden on me. And then he has that moment of grace and forgiveness. And here he is on the other side of it. When you want to know why David is a man after God's own heart, it's because when he receives grace, he responds to that grace. He didn't just take the grace for granted and move on. Oh, whew, good thing I avoided that one. All right, so how many people did I got on hand? No. He says, yours, Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the majesty and the splendor. For everything in heaven and earth is yours. All these things I was counting up, that's all yours. That is all your stuff. It's just stuff that, you know, you let me have on loan. He says, yours, Lord, is the kingdom, and you are exalted and head over all. For all wealth and honor come from you. For you are the ruler of all things, and in your hands is strength and power to exalt and to give strength to all. Now, O God, we give thanks and praise your glorious name. So he's saying, listen, God, all this stuff is yours. It is all yours. It is just on loan for me for a while. Anything I have, anything I will have is all from you and all really belongs to you. And I'm just borrowing it for a little while. That's it. And the thing is so many of us, we've heard this message before in church, right? You've heard this message before. Dave Ramsey, I think, says it this way. Everything's God's. Whenever he wants it back from you, he'll just take it and leave a little grease spot right where your body once sat. Just if he wants it, he'll take it. The reality of this, I mean, I've taught this passage, and I sort of had that moment, like what the Good Will Hunting moment is there. So you can, you know, sort of experientially know this, but I had one of those moments of smelling the Sistine Chapel and looking up at the ceiling. See, when you've walked through a house, and you see that when somebody leaves this earth, they leave it all behind. And you walk through and you see the different things and you know how tightly some of them were held on to and how much they were cherished and how much they were thought of as the apple of someone's eye. And then that person's gone and this stuff is just sitting here. And a lot of it you're like, what? I don't have any use for this now. And it either goes to the junk pile or to the donation pile or to somebody else. And it truly becomes real that all this stuff is just on loan. You know, what do you leave behind? Everything. Everything. And David, you know, why would David give $900 million? For the same reason that Buffett and Gates, in a sense, are wanting to give away their fortunes. At some point you realize there's no point in getting any more money, and it doesn't do me any good. And by the time I die, what's the point of hanging on to it? I got to leave it at some point, so why not give it away while I'm still here? Because eventually I got to give it all away anyway. It's almost like Buffett's magnanimously come out and says, well, I'm going to give away the vast portion of my estate. It's like newsflash. If you don't do it now, it's going to be done for you at some point. You with me on this? And David recognizes this now because it's all yours. How could he give $900 million? Because it's all God's anyway. What do I have that's not yours? So why not give it to you? To let you do something amazing with it. I mean, after all, I mean, I always think to myself, you know, don't you wish that Mr. Hilton of the Hilton Enterprise had this in his mind before he passed on a dollar to his little daughter? You with me on this? What could that have been? What good could that have come of that if you had just done the right thing with it instead? What are you going to do? Give it to your heiress for her to flaunt around like? No, moving on. Sorry, I get off topic. It's easier to pick on somebody else. And then he says, "You're the source of everything I have, all I've got, all I'll ever have, and so why not give it back to you?" And then he moves to this point, verse 14. He goes on. He says, "But who am I, and who are these people that we should even be able to give like this?" By the way, you live in America. You will make more this week working at McDonald's than most of the world will make like the entire month, if not the entire year. Just let that sink in, okay? You will make five times more per hour minimum in this country than most people will make in a whole day's work. Just let that sink in. And so in the same vein, he's just sitting here going, who are we that we should even be able to give like this? Give as generously as this. Everything comes from you. Everything we have just comes from your hand. We're just foreigners and strangers here on earth. And all our days on earth are like a shadow without hope. We come and we go. We're gone. We are here one day, gone the next. Lord, all this abundance, all that we have provided for this building, for you a temple, we're just pleased to give it to you. And all these things we've given willingly with honest intent. In other words, we're not trying to curry your favor. We're not trying to get anything back. We just want to give it because we love you. And you see, as a pastor, it's hard to get up here and teach about a message like this because I avoid these things. I mean, like, when was the last time you heard me teach on money? Somebody? Anybody? Come on now. When was it? Anybody? See, I'm scared to death to talk about it. Jesus talked about it half the time he talked. Over half his parables were about money. He talked more about money than he talked about grace, hope, love, and forgiveness. But I'm scared to talk about it because I'm afraid just maybe that some of you in here might think that I'm trying to manipulate you or give you to give out of guilt or get, you know, twist your arm on that. But, you know, the people here were giving freely and wholeheartedly and willingly. And how do I, as a pastor, get you to that point where you do that? I don't know. It's the same thing that, you know, Robin Williams looking there at Matt Damon going, I don't know how to get you to understand what this love is and what this response is. So just for a minute, the only people I want to talk to in this room are just the people who are amazed at grace for a minute. I mean, you're just overwhelmed by grace. When you sing, I once was lost, but now I'm found, you're not just singing that. That's your testimony. You live that out. The reality of that comes before you every time you walk in these doors, okay? And for you, I just want to say that as you go over the next 40 days, what's going to happen is this next week, you're going to pause for a moment and think about all you're thankful for, right? You're going to have a moment like David where you think about everything you're thankful for. Shortly thereafter that, you will gorge yourself on a huge buffet to the point where you can barely move. You'll roll over to the couch, watch some football, and then open up something from the newspaper and figure out how much you need to be happy again. So you'll leave the house and go out shopping in the middle of the night for it. And then you'll move into Christmas season and you'll buy all the gifts for the people you want to buy for. And then you'll buy all the gifts for people you have to buy for. And then there'll be some people you buy more for that you shouldn't have bought for. And you'll just go crazy in some areas and then forget about some other people to the last minute. And maybe, just maybe, we're hoping as a pastoral staff that, you know, we can help you dial things back in for the reason of the season as you move towards Christmas Eve, that you'll understand this whole thing started with a gift that was given to you by God, that was this grace gift that was just foreshadowed with here at this altar with David. And then after Christmas, your mind will move towards the coming year and what will happen and what this next year will be like and the hope and the promise of good things to come. And you'll reflect on what's good has happened this year, what you're happy to leave behind this past year. All these highs and lows will happen over the next 40 days. And in the midst of all that, I just want to ask that you would just consider during this time just to set aside something for God. That you would just set aside and think, you know, I'm not talking about tithe. Pastor Bobby gets up here every week and he talks about how to return back to portion to God what he's blessed you with. I'm not talking about that. You know, that proportional tithe giving. I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying, if you have a heart for the house like David had because you're so overwhelmed and in love with God, you know, would you be willing just to go and to give of your personal treasures and say, God, this is for you. And for whatever is to come. And I'm not saying this because we need, you know, more money because we're in, you know, dire straits as a church. We are financially healthy. You have an amazing group of trustees, by the way. If you ever meet somebody who's a trustee, just say thank you. You're an amazing steward of all of our assets. It doesn't matter how much money comes in or doesn't come in. They always break even or better every single time because they do an amazing job managing. So you've never heard me get up here and say, you know, you got to give or else we're going to die. We don't do that. What you're giving now is like what David gave. It wasn't for him. It was for the future. there's going to be somebody in Nicaragua or in Virginia Beach or something that benefits from that gift directly because of the way that you've blessed them or something you've started in this church or given to in this church. And they're going to be blessed by that and say, how on earth were you able to do that? Why on earth would you even be here for me? There's people over at Town Center. That campus doesn't support itself. It's supported by mostly you all. But we understand that 7 out of 10 people who live near that campus don't know Jesus. And so we give to that effort. And why do we do that? Why do we do that? Just because we have a heart for the house of God. And we want people to have a place where they can come and meet and connect with God like we have. And so over the next 40 days, I just want you to think about that and contemplate and consider that. And on Christmas Eve, we will actually pass a plate at Christmas Eve for you to give an offering back up to God. And that's not for everybody. It's just for those who have that heart of David. And I don't say that in a guilt way. I just, you know, if you want to freely and willingly and wholeheartedly be a part of that, I want to invite you to that. Would you join with me as we pray? Father, you are amazing. Your grace is overwhelming. I just want to pause for a moment right now. We might just think, Lord, not of you as the God of all creation, but as the one who knit me together in my mother's womb. Not as the one who sent his one and only son to die for the sins of all mankind, but for the one who loved me enough that while I was still sinning, you called me out by name, sent your son Jesus Christ down on the cross for me, that I might be forgiven. No matter what I've done, no matter what I've become, you love me. May we be overwhelmed by that. May we be amazed by that. And may you lead us to respond to that. And in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.